Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call this Board of Supervisor meeting to order. The date is October 31st. Happy Halloween, and the time is 9:01 a.m. I'm going to ask everyone to please stand, and I'm going to ask David Jones to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, then remain standing for an invocation by lead pastor Matt Whitehead from the Cross Point Community Church.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Father, we come before you this morning, and we thank you for another day, another opportunity to serve you and serve our community. Father, we thank you for the resources that you've given us, and as you say in your word, the welfare of the city that we live in. And so, Father, this morning we pray for the welfare of Modesto and the welfare of Stanislaus County. God, I thank you for these men and women who've been called to serve by here, the people, the county, for its betterment. Father, I pray that you'd give them discernment and wisdom this morning as they walk through decisions. Father, as they consider different aspects of those decisions. Father, we ask that you would bring peace to conversations. Father, we pray that you'd bring hope to people who are struggling. And Father, we thank you for all of those in every arm and facet that serve this community, those who deal with disputes, those who enforce laws, those who make laws, Father. I pray that you would continue to bless this community. Father, I pray for safety. I pray for wisdom. And God, most of all, we thank you that we have yet another day to serve you and love one another and serve one another. We thank you for these things, and we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you very much, Pastor. You will be up in a second. I said today I was thinking about getting dressed up for Halloween. I was going to come in as a dirty farmer. Thought about it. But I didn't want to get chewed out by Supervisor DeMartini for not wearing a tie. So anyways, we're going to move on to item three, and which is a presentation by the Children and Families Commission. It's their 2017 annual report to the community. And David Jones will start out, who's the newer executive director of the Children and Families and former something, I don't know exactly, manager for with Stanislaus County. Thanks for being here, Dave.
You are welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Hayes, Mr. Doering. It's an honor to be before you this morning. With me is George Skoll, who is a community representative on the commission. He's the past commission chair. Kathy Harwell, our chairperson right now, is on a long and advanced planned trip, so she is out and sends her regards to you today. But George will be tag teaming with me on our presentation of our annual report. I also want to introduce Stephanie Loomis and Veronica Asensio from the commission, who are with us today as well. Thank you for being here. Just to give you a little background on the Prop 10 Commission and what our mission is. It's to promote the development and well-being of children 0 to 5 in Stanislaus County. Proposition 10 was passed by California voters in 1998. It was a 50-cent tax on cigarettes and tobacco products. The funds are distributed to counties based on the number of live births that they have. There's an independent 9-member commission appointed by the Board of Supervisors. And we thank you. You've just appointed Ignacio Cantu, the principal of Shackelford Elementary School. He's our newest community member on the commission, so thank you for that. And the commission is charged with improving the health and well-being of children 0 to 5 and their families. It's currently estimated that there were over 7,700 births in the year 2016 in our county. And I also wanted to point out the initial proponents of Prop 10 included the American Cancer Society and the American Heart and American Lung Associations, who all recognized the negative impacts of smoking on children. 20 years later, we're still facing a new concern of the negative impacts of smoking marijuana and the impact on children, as there's clear evidence of the connection to low birth weights in babies. And again, our reminder is our goal is to give the best possible start to the lives of children 0 to 5.
This chart shows the people you've appointed to the commission. I would like any commissioners in attendance to please stand. Thank you. By law, the commission is made up of the following: 4 community reps who have ties to any organization involved with 0 to 5, a person from school administration, the county health officer, 2 county department heads chosen from CSA, HSA, and BRHS, a member of the Board of Supervisors. We are grateful that Supervisor Chiesa has chosen to be with us for these many years. We've had 2 significant departures, 2 people who've made a real difference to the children in this community, Dr. John Walker and Denise Hunt. We will miss them. Another change is the retirement of John Sims and the appointment of Dave Jones as executive director. I could tell you about John Sims' contribution, but I understand you want to get through this meeting before trick-or-treating starts. Who's next? On your screen are the contracts we have with the organizations that we provide funding to. If there are representatives here today, I ask them to stand and be recognized. You can tell we're running out of money. It is these organizations that do the actual work to transform tobacco tax dollars into healthier, safer children, better equipped to learn.
The commission is also engaged in significant efforts beyond the 15 organizations that it has a close relationship with. Over the years, the commission has been strongly engaged with the Child Abuse Prevention Council, Safe Kids Stanislaus, and the local planning council. The commission has also been extensively engaged with the Stanislaus Reads Project and is becoming much more engaged with the Focus on Prevention movement, especially in the Strengthening Families initiative.
As you can see from the next 2 charts, we serve the entire county. The second chart is a map showing the locations of all our facilities that we fund. Many of our contractors provide services throughout the county.
So who do we serve? The slide that you're seeing here is actually a photo of an event from our Oakdale Family Resource Center that's run by the Center for Human Services. And it actually reminds me of the story that Supervisor Withrow has shared that really kind of spurred him on in the Focus on Prevention movement, which was a story he tells much better about a call that he received about a situation happening down the street from him where a driver had run off the road and there was a small child in the back of the vehicle. And I'll let him some other day share that story, but how powerfully moving that was in terms of the needs of the family that was engaged there. And if you think of that story, that's how you can kind of think of the work of the commission as well. It's trying to reach people where they are in their times of need and also focus on prevention to help them live healthier lives. So if we go to the population of who we serve, you'll see probably the most striking thing is that 54.7% of children 0 to 5 in our county live below the 200% of the federal poverty level. That is a significant number. For a population estimate of little more than 46,000 children in our county. So there are some definite challenges for the people that we do serve in our community. Also of note on the infant mortality is we've seen significant historical improvement in that rate, but there's still work to be done on that. In terms of the participants that we serve, the impact is quite significant. More than 31,000 people were reached through the work of the commission and its partners during this past year. Over the years, the work of the commission has become an indispensable part of how desperately needed services are delivered to our children and their families. More than 13,600 parents and guardians were reached, more than 11,000 children, and almost 6,000 other family members, like siblings, were reached through the programs that we offer. In terms of ethnicity and race of participants, this really reflects the community of Stanislaus and our diverse population. as does the languages spoken of those people who we serve. In looking at our budget, as you can see, the commission has taken a focused approach. Approximately 62% of our funding goes toward improving family functioning. And these are programs such as our Family Resource Centers, the Healthy Start programs, the BHRS 0 to 5 Early Intervention Partnership Program, the Children's Crisis Center, and many more. Approximately 20% is targeted toward improving the health status, and this covers things like the county's Healthy Cubs program, Healthy Birth Outcomes, and Dental Disease Prevention Program. Another thing I wanted to note is that the threshold for administrative costs for the commission is around 10% per policy. Historically, the commission comes in around 5 to 6%, which is extremely low for administrative costs of an organization. I wanted you to be aware of that as well. In looking at some of our highlights of strengthening families, our commission operates in order to provide a stable and healthy environment for children. In doing so, families must be strengthened. And here are some of our results for 2016-17. The parents of 10,400 children receive family support services through countywide family resource centers or other programs. 2,373 received more intensive services focused on improving child abuse risk factors. The parents of nearly 2,500 children attended parenting classes to increase parenting skills and knowledge. 418 children experienced improvements in their family environment after being involved in enrolled in respite child care. This category represents the work of our community partners such as CASA, Children's Crisis Center, the 0 to 5 Partnership with Behavioral Health, our Family Resource Centers, and many more. I need to reference the Commission's work in supporting a community-wide network of Family Resource Centers, or we call them FRCs, you might have heard that before, as it's recognized statewide as a significant strength of our county. The FRCs are nonprofit organizations that are geographically dispersed, that provide a location for people to gather, receive parenting training, attend support groups, receive assessments and counseling, access up to 25 different programs, as well as referrals to many additional resources. The stories that come out of the FRCs are incredibly powerful, and they highlight the tremendous work that is being done in our community. The Commission also enjoys a strong relationship with the Community Services Agency, which provides funding to our FRCs to leverage their community strengths in providing services. I also want to point out about 43% of our funding at the Commission goes to intense interventions in the community, about 46% goes to broad interventions, and only currently about 11% goes toward prevention, which is definitely something that we're looking at and underscores, I think, the challenge that has been facing all organizations that have had funding, which is there's so much need out there for intervention, but are you really getting to the root causes? So that's part of what we're going to be continuing to look at as we move forward.
The next chart highlights, the first and third bullets highlight the link between the commission and the Stanislaus Reeds program, which is part of your focus on prevention. The commission's been involved in Stanislaus Reeds since its inception. This chart shows the achievements of the Health Services Administration programs funded by the commission. Some of the programs were conceived by the commission, such as Healthy Birth Outcomes. We're particularly proud of Healthy Birth Outcomes and the Healthy Cub programs. One of the commission's objectives is to promote sustainability by our 501c3 contractors. Our yearly evaluations ask for information about their sustainability efforts. In prior years, we have provided training in sustainability. The fruit of that labor is shown by the $8.7 million in funds donated to these people or raised by these organizations outside of the Prop 10 program.
We're encouraged that our program shows the expansive services that are being offered and the quality of the services that are being offered as well. But we want to highlight also some of the challenges that are going to be facing the commission going forward. We've been in a position of declining revenues, and on one hand, that's a good thing, as it's the result of people not smoking as much. but it's also quite challenging in that there is just tremendous community need for services for our children and their families that don't have other funding sources. We've been using a significant amount of fund balance to pay for services to meet these needs. But as poverty and social issues continue to be significant, so are the community's needs. So if we can go to our financial position slide, thank you. So based on the factors that we have before us, let's take a look at our financial position. You can see over the last 5 years our fund balance decreasing. That is a planned spend down of fund balance to help support the programs that we're funding. As you can see, our expenses have remained stable, so we've used fund balance to continue to provide for those people who are fulfilling our contractual services out there. You can also see the steady decline of revenue over time as well. And while the commission has been working for approximately 10 years to give notice to our community partners and the county agencies that it funds, that our level of funding cannot be sustained and it will need to be adjusted. And we definitely recognize that as a commission, we're at a crossroads right now. So moving forward for the commission, we're starting an intensive strategic planning process. And the process will include opportunities for feedback from the community, our customers, and partner organizations. We estimate this process will take approximately 10 to 12 months. We'll be looking at our own strategic direction as well as the systems and structures of how services are provided in our community to children and their families. We'll work closely with key stakeholders, representatives from the community, our current partners, as well as our clients and customers and others, to help create a vision for our future that honors the power of working collectively for solutions. While this journey will be difficult, we're prepared to do what it takes to come out the other side of this tunnel stronger than we went in, and to help continue to make Stanislaus County a great place to grow families and to give children and their families a better opportunity for the future. Having said that, I also want to reflect on John Sims. Having been in this position for about 6 months now, it is evident of the incredible work that John did and pretty much just developing the commission over the years. The first years of all of the commissions in the state of California were a little rugged. They had to very quickly form, and to be honest, with the amount of funding that was coming in, some of them took a long time to figure out how to handle that. John helped with the commission members that we have really put the commission on a positive, sturdy directory for the future with significant impact to our community. And while, you know, John is retired now, it's just more evident than ever, just the incredible work that he did. And I wanted to honor John as well today. So with that, you have at your place today a copy of our report to the community, which is starting to go out in local newspapers throughout our community. And it's also available at our StanProp10.org website. And we want to thank you today for the opportunity to give our annual report for 2016-17 to highlight the great work of our community partners and the work of our commissioners. We're incredibly passionate and focused on the well-being of children in our community and the families that we serve. So with that, we would ask if you have any questions.
Do we have any questions? I have some comments. Have any questions? I guess I will, David, you took the job and you see the fiscal cliff. We call it the fiscal cliff all the time where the line meets. Welcome to the commission, by the way. We have to do something. But that was a process. I know you weren't a part of that process back in 2010, 11, 12. A ton of need. Every one of the counties are pulling back. The state's pulling back money. So we felt that there was a need in the community. So I look forward to this discussion that we're going to have as a commission on what to do if we're going to lower the bar, if we're going to raise the bar, if we're going to look to other revenue sources. I know that the state, when they raised the cigarette tax, of course, that stems, and that's a good thing, and that's a bad thing for the commission. So we do have to look at other things. I think that you had mentioned in your opening statement about the low birth weight on folks that are smoking marijuana, too. So that's not out of the realm of possibilities. Again, that's here we are trying to get people to stop smoking, and yet we're allowing, as a society, we're allowing it. So I appreciate you guys looking at everything. I want to state for the board again, if it wasn't for Dr. Wei Champion, I think I'm still the junior member. Actually, Kathy Harwell. I'm about the junior member on here with 9 years in. So we've got a very seasoned board. Nellie, George, and Dave are three outside appointments. All have been on there much longer than myself. And so I'm continually learning. I don't spend enough time. I fully admit that. It's one of my assignments. I love the assignment. But we have such a committed board that it really takes a lot of pressure off of me. And with you there now, David, it makes it even easier. And to Stephanie and Veronica, thank you for your patience with me all the time. They're always trying to catch me up also. It's a small staff, but it's a mean and lean staff, right? For sure. So I appreciate everything you've done, the outcomes. The FRC is the one other comment I wanted to talk about, the Family Resource Centers being such an important part of small communities. In Houston, and I've used this example over and over and over again, the whole national night out was organized through the FRC. And it wasn't FRC money, but because there's so many volunteers there and they're so plugged into the community, especially the people that aren't mainstream in the community, it makes Houston's National Night Out, makes every other city's pale in comparison. And I say that, if you do it on a block party, you're talking about bringing a community together. Isn't that what our goal is all the time, bringing the community together, not dividing it? And the National Night Out really works because we're bringing multiple communities together that might not be touched under regular circumstances. So I'm a huge supporter of the Family Resource Centers and what they do. Huge supporter of what they've done at the what we've done at the Children and Families Commission, and I appreciate everything. So, anything else? Seeing none, we thank you again for your annual report, and look forward to seeing this in the paper.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Okay, now we'll move on to public comment. Item four, it's an opportunity to speak on any item that is not on today's posted agenda. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes. Is there anyone that would like to take the mic? Seeing none, we'll move on to the consent calendar. Consent calendar is any item marked with an asterisk. Would any board member like to pull any items? Would anyone in the audience like to comment on any items? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
I'll move to approve the consent calendar.
Second it.
We have a motion and we have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Passes 5-0. On to item B5, approval to continue the crisis intervention program for the children and youth. I'm not going to read all of that, Rick, because I've got a bad eye today. Welcome.
We'll read it for you. Thank you very much, Chairman Chiesa, supervisors, Mr. Hayes, Mr. Doering. It's my great pleasure to be with you today to present to you our findings and recommendation for our crisis intervention program for children. To my left is Shannon McDonald, who's our senior leader for Children's Services. She's gonna help with the presentation today, and also Mandeep Dhillon, our trusty assistant director, who has assisted us with helping to prepare the presentation as well. This was a pilot program that was begun in 2015, and it was intended to be a pilot program, and the purpose of the program was to try to provide an alternative to divert children from the emergency department, primarily at Doctors Medical Center, into a crisis intervention so that it would relieve some crowding at the Doctors Medical Center emergency department and provide an alternative to hospitalization. And the idea was to try to pilot this and then bring it back for further consideration and action as a permanent part of our program design. And Aspirinet, which is one of our contract providers, entered into agreement with us in June of 2016. Similar to the adult crisis intervention program, it was instrumental in providing alternatives to inpatient hospitalizations and focused on keeping with a focus on keeping minors out of hospital-based settings. The initial goals for the program at that time were to provide intervention services to 80 to 100 children, increase the quality of mental health services for children and youth age 6 to 17, improve the well-being of children and youth, and increase family engagement, and provide vital family support for children in crisis. And so I'm going to turn it over to Shannon and have her give a little more background and then talk about some of what we're hoping to do going forward.
Good morning. After one full year of service delivery, results of the program pilot have exceeded our expectations. In the first year of the program, BHRS has provided crisis intervention services to a total of 192 children and youth. On average, 16 children were seen in the program each month. Only 13 children required hospitalization subsequently to program services, meaning BHRS successfully averted 179 children from hospitalization. Benefits of the program exceeded beyond the children and children served and their families as well. Program services help to prevent out-of-county hospitalizations. The number of inpatient facilities in California that accept children and adolescents is extremely limited, with the closest facilities located in the Bay Area, Sacramento, or Bakersfield. This can cause added stress to children and their families as they must travel out of the area and are sometimes impacted by limited access and lengthy wait times and for available beds. The SIP provides a safe and comfortable environment for children and their families to seek assistance, in stark contrast to busy hospital emergency departments. The services are provided in a respectful and dignified manner, showing the value and care of those served. Program services also manage to de-escalate the crisis and family tension associated with the situation at hand, provide relief to both children and their families in a time of extreme challenge. In addition to invaluable benefits provided to children and their families, there are tangible measures of success, such as the number of children averted from hospitalization. During the pilot period, a total of 192 children and adolescents were seen in the SIP. Of those, only 19 required hospitalization within a six-month period after receiving services through the SIP. A total of 179 children were successfully averted from subsequent hospitalization, a 93.2% success rate for its first year. Return on investments. Costs are important factors to measure the feasibility of a program. Do the benefits exceed the use of limited resources while providing desired outcomes? The pilot period required the use of approximately $108,000 in program startup cost, shown in the lower portion of the pilot year identified in the center bar, incurring a total of approximately $700,000 in cost for the year. Had the 179 children who successfully utilized services at the SIP been hospitalized instead, it would have estimated to have cost the county $1.2 million based on an average of a 5 to 6 day length of stay hospitalization projected in the purple bar. This means that the SIP program provided the county with an estimated $500,000 in savings, easily recovering the startup costs and more as identified in the green bar. From an investment perspective, in terms of cost avoidance, this translates to a return of on investment or cost avoidance of 70.2% and an impressive return during the program's first year. Using the success realized during the pilot period and projecting it out 4 years, keeping hospitalization and programs cost static, the chart shows how estimated savings over time would grow. The green line shows estimated hospitalization cost over time. The blue line is the projected SIP cost. Both are shown cumulatively. The area shown between these measures identifies projected savings, with a year five realizing a total of $2.9 million over the life of the program. BHRS is recommending that the SIP be extended through June 30, 2019, based on the positive experience and outcomes realized through the pilot program. Throughout the extension, BHRS will continue to evaluate and report on the SIP's program experience and outcomes as the department explores alternative to acute hospitalization, so that the knowledge and outcomes as the knowledge and experience gained in running the SIP can be used more effectively. The SIP has been extremely successful in averting hospitalizations for children and youth, but it does have its limitations. It is an unlicensed program, meaning that medication services cannot be offered in the SIP. Additionally, individuals held on California Welfare and Institution Codes 5150 hold, which authorizes a qualified officer or clinician to involuntarily confine those suspected of a mental disorder that makes them a danger to self, danger to others, and or gravely disabled, cannot be brought to the SIP program. Potential options currently being considered are a Children's Crisis Stabilization Unit and Crisis Residential Program, which would provide additional billing services, increased options for children in crisis, revenues to help offset the costs. These are licensed programs which would allow a broader range of interventions, including medication management. For more flexibility in terms of accepting individuals on a legal hold, BHRS does not currently have the resources to fund one or more of these programs and is exploring various grant options, such as triage grant funding, which will allow the department more fiscal leverage in exploring these options and alternatives to acute hospitalization. During the planning process, the department is requesting that the SIP remain in place as the most effective interim solution to reduce emergency room crowding and prevent hospitalization. Staff recommendation number one, authorize to continue the continuation of the crisis intervention program for children and adolescents through June 30, 2019, as Behavioral Health and Recovery Services continues to evaluate program experience data and outcomes to explore other alternatives to acute hospitalization. Two, approve the extension of the lease agreement with 1444 Florida Avenue, LLC, Triple L Investments, and 4701 Stoddard, LLC, and related services and sublease agreements with Aspirinet for the provision of continued psychiatric hospitalization, hospital diversion, and crisis intervention services to children and adolescents through June 30, 2019. Third, authorize the purchasing agent or designee to sign the lease agreement with 1444 Florida Avenue, LLC, Triple L Investments, and 4701 Stoddard, LLC. Lastly, authorize the behavioral health director or designee to sign the service and sublease agreements for the provision of continued psychiatric hospital diversion and crisis intervention services to children and adolescents through June 30, 2019. Now open it to questions.
Do we have any questions of staff? Go ahead, Supervisor Withrow.
Thank you. Great presentation, guys. And, you know, I asked that we pull this, and we had this on consent, and asked that we pull this just so we can kind of show how this program has shined. And just like any pilot program, I think it's good to, as we bring it back, rather than just run it through consent, let's talk about the result and so we can really make a decision as far as to continue the pilot. But this has worked out great. This is just what we wanted to happen. And it's just, I know it's not the answer, it's, you know, the end all to be all, but it is another tool in the shed through our crisis intervention program here. The human side of it is great. We talk about the reduction of out-of-county kind of transfers, hospitalizations, having to send kids out of the county. That's great. But from an accountant standpoint, the cost savings is great. I mean, we recovered our initial investment in the first year. And that's a great thing. We talk about the return on investment, the ROI. We always have acronyms in the county. So accountants, we have acronyms sometimes too. And ROI is one of our acronyms we look at, return on investment. And so to be able to recover that just in the first year of the program is a great thing. And in the end, about $500,000 we saved by doing this. So it's not only the human side, which is great, what we're doing there and the diversion and keeping people out of DBHC, but just there's the dollar side of it too. So I think this is a great program, and I, like I said, I know there's a lot of things we can't do, medication, but we're looking, we're going to other areas. that are going to help with that. But I think this has proven itself, obviously, just by the return that we've got here and the results, the human side results. And I really think it's a great thing to continue this on, extend the beyond the pilot. And then plus, as we look at other areas, this is a great launching pad. So thank you, guys. Great presentation. I very much support this.
Any other questions? Yeah, this is a pretty simple one, I think, with that kind of a return on investment. And you talked about the human side of keeping people local. It's invaluable. There's certain components you can't put a value on. So appreciate it. Anyone in the audience want to comment? Seeing none, back to the board.
Okay, I will make a motion to approve all four staff recommendations.
We have a motion and a second on the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you for pulling that. Okay, we're going to move on to item C3, approval and adopt recommended to Caltrans a locally preferred alignment alternative to the North County Corridor Project. Matt Machado presenting. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. Sorry. Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, geez.
Oh, I'll make it.
I shook his hand earlier, too. I just want to wash it the whole day.
I'm going to blame it on allergies today.
All right.
So good morning, Mr. Chairman, supervisors, Mr. Hayes, Mr. Doring. I will get warmed up here. Trust me. The item before you is a request to adopt and recommend to Caltrans a locally preferred alignment alternative for the North County Corridor Project. And I do have a presentation to share with you this morning. The North County Corridor Project is a high priority project for Stanislaus County, its communities, and the growing urbanized cities of Modesto, Oakdale, and Riverbank. The project will ultimately build a west-to-east freeway expressway that would improve regional network circulation, relieve existing traffic congestion, reduce traffic delay, accommodate future traffic, benefit commerce, and enhance safety. Some of the work that we've completed thus far on the project is that we successfully formed a JPA in the spring of 2008. And in May of 2010, we completed a route adoption, which the result of that determined that the facility we build will be State Route 108. This adoption was completed by the California Transportation Commission. It was a approved CEQA document to complete that process. In August of 2010, we issued a notice of preparation to start the current process that we're in today, which is the final days of our environmental process. On August 9th of this year, we released a draft EIR-EIS for public review. The purpose of this EIR-EIS is to determine a precise alternative for the North County Corridor. On September 7th, we conducted a public hearing open house. We had about 500 members of the public there. It was a lot of good comments, discussion, and opportunities for the public to comment on our process. And then October 16th, we closed that comment period. And so we're in the current phase of, we're starting to respond to public comments currently. And that will result in a final environmental document. And the purpose of this environmental document is to select a very precise alternative. And so these are the alternatives that we currently have. I will quickly show them to you. Through the Modesto Riverbank area, it's a combined alternative, single alternative. And then as we go east of Riverbank, alternative one is the one that hugs the general plan areas of Riverbank and Oakdale. Alternative two, stays along the Claribel alignment. And then east of Oakdale, there are really two options to connect to State Route 120. There's the A alternative, which connects at about Atlas Road along the Stearns corridor, and then alternative B, which connects nearly to Lancaster Road, quite a ways east of Oakdale. And so with these two connections and then the two alternatives east and west, it creates four possible alternatives, 1A, 1B, 2A, or 2B. To get to this precise alignment, our region will be making a recommendation to Caltrans in the month of December, hopefully. And that process goes a bit like this. And so our project development team, which is made up of all members of Caltrans, StanCog, the county, City of Modesto, City of Oakdale, City of Riverbank, and our consultant team, we will draft a recommendation for Caltrans consideration. At the end of the process, it is Caltrans' decision to adopt and ratify the final environmental document. Some key factors for selecting the precise alternative. We will need to consider the findings of the environmental and engineering studies. We will need to consider comments received during the public comment period. And Caltrans will be considering recommendations by the local agencies. And those local agencies are your board, the city councils of Modesto, Oakdale, and Riverbank. And then, of course, Caltrans will consider project costs. The findings of the environmental engineering studies are both compliant through CEQA and NEPA. We completed both processes to ensure that we would be eligible for state and federal funding. In general, all four alignment alternatives are viable and have similar impacts. I will cover some of the key areas of differences, and it's really between the A's and the B's. But some of those key differences are with regard to impacts to farmland, wildlife habitat, and right-of-way impacts. And so I will start with looking at the A's versus the B's. And so we can see that in terms of environmental impact, the B alternatives have more impact because it covers a larger area. The A's have less impact to the environment. Here's some of the numbers from the Natural Communities and Endangered Species Act. And the B's have a bit more impact to the environment versus the A's, which are the connections closer to Oakdale. But then, of course, there's a flip side. And the flip side is that the B's have less impact to businesses and people. And it just roughly, in summary, the B alternatives have, on average, 5 fewer business impacts and 15 fewer housing relocation impacts. So there's substantially less impacts to the human, the people, businesses, and homes. That's the B alternatives. The comments we received in general during the public comment period, a large majority of commenters opposed the A alternatives, which makes sense because the A alternatives have the most impact to people. People have opportunity to comment, so we heard a lot of that. Majority of commenters did prefer the 1B alternative. Many stated a preference for either the 1B or the 2B, meaning that the B alternative was the clear preference for people. And other comments received were with regard to the right-of-way process, drainage, and other property-specific questions. So a bit of a summary of where we've been lately with regard to our local agency input. On September 18th, Oakdale City Council passed a resolution selecting as their locally preferred alternative 1B. On October 24th, Riverbank City Council passed a similar resolution selecting alternative 1B. Here we are today on October 31st in front of your board to make a decision as well. Tomorrow, we have agendized the North County Corridor JPA meeting to ask that board for a selection of an alternative. And then through the month of November, we plan to get in front of the Modesto City Council for a similar selection of alternatives so that we can make a recommendation to Caltrans in December. I will quickly go through the selection process by the City of Oakdale and Riverbank. September 18th, City of Oakdale selected 1B for these 5 reasons. They believe that 1B would have less impact on their general plan area. They believe that 1B would displace the least number of homes and businesses. They believe that 1B provided a direct connection to the city's future plan area through the industrial plan specific area. They believe that 1B would accommodate connections to existing and planned industrial commercial uses. and that 1B had a lower cost compared to 2B by $11 million. Riverbank City Council on October 24th selected 1B for similar reasons. They summarized it. In essence, they said that 1B would provide better economic benefit to their city, and so they believe that 1B was their preferred choice. So a bit of a final summary here, because cost is important to Caltrans, who will be making the final decision. If we look at just the Bs, the 1B is $11 million less estimate than the 2B, considering those impacts. And so that leaves us to a decision for your board. The recommendation today is simply to approve approval to adopt and recommend to Caltrans a locally preferred alignment alternative. Staff has not provided an alternative selection for your choice, because you can see that there's just a difference here between alternatives. There's impacts to people more so, or there's impacts to the environment more so. And so it truly is a choice of your board. But I do share with you what the other agencies have reflected in their decisions. So with that, turn it back to the board for questions or comments.
Questions or comments? So question, we have Riverbank and Oakdale have picked one already, and if we choose a different one, then how's the then it goes to North County Quarters, the actual arbitrator in this, who
so we would just have to reflect that decision to Caltrans and leave it up to their discretion on which alternative is the best. They have told us numerous times that a unanimous local preference will carry great weight with them, but it's certainly not the deciding factor. And so even if there is a difference in our local agency's decisions, they'll take that into account and still have to make a decision.
Yeah. The costs, though, were, for some reason, I thought originally the costs were quite different, but they looked like they were very similar this time. Was there some, did something change? Was it ever,
They were always fairly close.
Oh, they were. Fairly okay. Close. I'm probably thinking 132. Yeah, I gotcha. I got you there, Supervisor Withrow. You're up.
Okay. thanks, Matt. So, you know, this process on the North County Corridor has been going on for, when did this start, Matt? It was before my time.
Yeah, the JPA was formed in 2008, so we're on year nine.
Yeah, it's been going 10. Forever. But I mean, great things are happening here. It's finally all starting to come to fruition. And when we began this thing, we had about 10,000 alternatives. I know it wasn't that many, but it was like...
We had 18 at one point that were fairly reasonable.
Right.
18 alternatives.
18 alternatives, yeah.
And then we carried six for a number of years. And so, yeah, now down to four. It's been a long haul, yes. Yeah.
And the great thing about this process has been that the public engagement in this. And there's been a lot of public engagement. And we'd sit here in these meetings, and I sit, most recently I'm on the chair, but was the chair, but before me it was Bill O'Brien forever, was the chair of North County Quarter. And we'd sit in these meetings, and just the interaction between the public and the give and take, and it was just a great to see the democratic process work is what I felt like. I know ultimately Caltrans is going to decide this thing, but as you said, so much weight is put towards what the community wants. And so back and forth, these routes were changing constantly as a result of information that was coming from the public, whether it was through these meetings or through the public meetings that they'd have where hundreds of people would show up and sit down and look at all the drawings and stuff. So we finally got down to these four, and it really is as a result of the engagement with the public and us listening to what they want and hearing their concerns and trying to weigh their concerns, you know, with the cost and all that's involved. So I think it's been a great process. You couldn't ask for a better process. Painful at times, very painful. Some very passionate discussions have happened about this, but I think we really have gotten, as a result of this great process, down to the four that are best fit, and we just need to figure out which one. You know, in my mind, 2B from the get-go was the best one. It you know, we stayed on Clarabelle and it stayed south and worked its way as far east. But how do you go against what the public wants in the end with regard to Riverbank and Oakdale and what they really want as the best route? So that's the only question that I have a little bit is 2B. I thought was one that I'd love to see us stay on, because we just stayed on Clarabelle longer. but I realize that there's more costs there, and in the end, when it comes down to what Riverbank and Oakdale, like I said, want, it's that's how this process has worked all along, is to listen to the public and listen to what the community wants. So so I guess I'm okay with even though my route didn't win, 2B, but I'm okay with going with 1B if that's what the community wants up there. So I very much appreciate all the efforts that have gone into this and the years of us going through this process, and we're finally getting there. And if you just look at the entire project, really starting from 99 to where it's going to end up, the great things that have happened along Kernan up there, you know, and just, and even though it's not a freeway at this point, and this is going to be a long ways before we get there, just by us starting, and we talk about this all the time, because we're going to do the same thing with 132, just getting some shovels on the ground and get things happening, the money will come. This thing started with no money either. And look how much we've progressed at this point and where we're getting. So so this is just a shining example of get the shovel in the ground, get the project started, and the funds will come. And that's what's happened as we started at 99 with the interchange there and worked our way towards McHenry. And now as we work on this eastern part of the route, I think this shows how these things work and how we can eventually get to completed great projects. So I will be, I guess, in support of 1B, as the communities of Oakdale and Riverbank seem to endorse.
Supervisor Olson.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to see that we're finally making really a lot of progress on the North County Corridor. As you'll remember, Matt, the first thing I did after I was an elected board member, but before I was a sworn-in board member, was attend a community meeting with you and Bill O'Brien in a backyard, and I have never seen so many people turn out for a meeting ever. There were hundreds.
Yeah, I think we had way north of 100 people there that evening.
Yeah, hundreds of people, and you did a fantastic job answering people's concerns and questions. I believe when this project is done, it will have a huge positive impact on people who live in Modesto, Riverbank, Oakdale, Sonora, and the county at large. But there were a lot of concerns about negative impacts it could have on a few. And so I'm really pleased that the alternatives we're looking at putting forward now do go to Lancaster instead of Atlas. I think that was the number one concern I've been hearing for years. So I think that's a positive. The one question I did have, as we've all probably read about, there are concerns that Conagra has with the preferred alternative of both the cities of Oakdale and Riverbank. I would assume both the county and the cities, I know the cities intend to work very collaboratively with Conagra to make sure that we help them find and identify other land where they can apply their wastewater. How will that process work moving forward?
So the impact to Conagra, as shown today, is with regard to their piping network, which we can easily mitigate and replace piping and keep them connected. One of the mitigation efforts that they feel a little bit more concerned about is the loss of their ag land. Today, they dispose of their wastewater on the ag lands in that area. We've looked at ag land in the area, and there's a number of acres in the area, plenty to replicate the loss that they would sustain through the North County corridor going through that area. So that the point is that we believe we can mitigate acre per acre for their loss of disposal ground in the same area. It's just a matter of piping it to those other fields in the vicinity. And so we think we can mitigate them fully. They understand that. It's just a matter of proof or the evidence that we can do it. And so, you know, at this point, to them, talk is, you know, just talk.
Sure.
And so we'll have to get to the point where we're at final design and going through the right-of-way process and developing those agreements one by one. And once we have that agreement in place with them, then they will breathe easy and sleep well and all that. Today, they understand it's possible. They just, you know, they want to see it in writing. But we'll get to that point.
Okay.
If this alternative is selected.
Okay. And the funding for those mitigation efforts would be provided by the project. Is that correct?
Correct. That is correct. Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Any other questions, please?
Could I just, Matt, real quick, timeline, in the best of scenarios, what would be the timeline when we'd start to actually affect ConAgra out there and have to have this figured out?
So with the Caltrans final environmental document scheduled for next year, we could then begin final design in the right-of-way process, which we believe will take upwards of 5 years to get that all done, and that's when we'll have those determinations made with ConAgra. And then at that point, depending on funding, we can move into construction sometime after that five-year mark. And so just high level, 5 years is kind of that magic marker where we believe we can have final design and all the right-of-way acquired and all those agreements in place, and then we could start looking at construction schedules, depending on funding, and that's when physical impacts would happen, would occur.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you much. Any other questions, comments? Anyone in the audience? Comment? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board.
I'll make a motion to approve staff recommendation to advance 1B as the locally preferred route.
Okay. We have a motion. Do I have a second?
I will second that.
We have a motion and a second on 1B preferred alternative. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Very good. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Moving on, we have no scheduled matters. Correspondence.
This board has received a resolution from the Denaire Unified School District requesting the change of their governing board member elections from odd number to even number years.
Refer to the clerk recorder and register our voters.
This board has received two letters from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services regarding the U.S. Department of Ag and the U.S. Small Business Administration disaster declarations for primary and contiguous counties, including Stanislaus County, due to agricultural losses of dry beans caused by the intermittent rain that occurred October 1st, 2016 through May 1st, 2017.
Refer to the Ag Commissioner and the Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received a letter from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development regarding the approval of Stanislaus County's annual action plan and the funding for those programs.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports? Seeing none, Legislative Fiscal Management Report.
Just a quick report for you. As you're aware, the state legislature is currently in recess. They do have a couple of hearings that are taking place over the next couple of months, but our interest and attention is in monitoring potential tax reform at the federal level, and the bill that would be introduced from Congress, hopefully within the next week, is when we may see something. And what we want to specifically bring your attention to is the potential impacts to changes in deductions for state and local taxes. That is the primary conversation that's occurring around local governments in California. As you're aware, California benefits the most from state and local tax deductions, and the potential that those could change in a proposed tax reform measure are very important to local government here in California. So we'll see how that goes. It does look like in the last couple of days that there have been some potential concessions on that issue even before the bills are introduced. But once they are introduced, we'll be watching that very closely, and we will report back to you on that progress as it moves forward to see if there are any implications here at the local level. And the last piece of my report for today is a Halloween message to the community. We wish everybody a very safe and nice Halloween. We love this time of the year. This is the one time out of the year that the cobwebs on my porch become decorations. So thank you all very much. Everybody have a safe Halloween.
That was good. This is why I love Stanislaus County. And I thought when you were talking about the legislature being in recess, I thought we were all going to break out in applause and an expectation. Okay, so we do have a closed session. County Council.
Yes, excuse me. Mr. Chairman, we have closed session this morning that I have conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision D1. This involves one case, County of Stanislaus versus City of Modesto, Stanislaus County Superior Court, case number 667397. We do not expect a report out, and it'd be appropriate to ask if there are any public comments before adjourning to closed session.
Any public comments? Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned to closed session.